Are you there?
Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how you doing?
Good. Did you, starting things, starting to get back to normal after your Christmas celebrations, your holidays?
Yeah, I finished up the eggnog and my tree is still sitting in my dining room waiting to be taken out to the trash. Just haven't gotten around to it yet, but otherwise, things are going well. Didn't gain too much weight over the holidays, which was nice. So,
nice.
Yeah. And then you're getting over jet lag, I assume?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well on the jet lag front. I was thinking today after I cleaned up all the decorations yesterday and I had to clean up all the mess after our fake Christmas tree, I could only imagine what it's like cleaning up after a real Christmas tree.
I think that's why I'm not taking it down. I can imagine all the needles. As soon as I pick it up, all the needles are just going to fall onto my dining room rug. So,
well, think of it as a good shifting exercise, trying to find all the small needles.
Find all the needles, yes. yeah. Sounds fun.
Excellent. Well, it was nice to see lots of good responses, people still doing their eye exercises over the Christmas time.
Yeah.
I delighted in... I had a voicemail when I got off the aeroplane as soon as I landed, and it was from a lady saying she had just got back from the ophthalmologist and she had dropped down in her glasses prescription. So that was a nice welcome.
Very nice. Very nice.
America. And I guess we should get started with some of these great questions that we got this week.
That sounds good. So do you want to start?
Sure. Let me, I guess the first question we should answer would be that we seem to have had several questions, the same question, from several different people. And, it's kind of funny really, because this is something that we've been focusing on and something that, we're going to start doing some in-person lectures on this subject. And it's to do with using the computer.
Right. We're going to be focusing on that quite a bit. Yep.
Yeah, and it's certainly a common question. And I was saying to you that I heard when I was back in the UK a woman who's head of an etiquette school, and she was talking about etiquette with smartphones at the dinner table at Christmas time.
And oh, that's right.
And she made the point that this technology has never existed before. There is no etiquette. Everything else we've learned from previous generations, but the first time we're
right.
Finding that this has never existed. And this really does tie in with using the computer. Nobody knows how to use the computer safely.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, I know they talk in. I don't know if you've ever worked in a standard office for a company, but it's nothing more exciting than going through the health and safety talks that they do, and they make you sit and watch a video about not having liquids next to the computer. And you know, as kids, I mean, maybe they talked about not sitting too close to the TV because your eyes are going square or something. but even that's still relatively new. But actually, yeah. Sitting for long periods of time, or even shorter periods of time at the computer, there isn't really any guidelines yet that exist on how to help, and people just don't realize.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that people hear from the sort of the health community is, oh, you could get computer glasses. It sort of spawned a new industry of prescribing glasses specifically designed for you sitting in front of a computer for long hours and staring at the screen. But very rarely do they say, well, how do we prevent you from needing those glasses? Is this causing some sort of harm that you should be worried about? So, mm-hmm. No, they prescribe computer glasses. So, yeah, so it's a huge issue, and obviously it's getting more and more intense as an issue in our society. The more and more everything is shifting to computers, including books, and you know, obviously all the I was watching last night an old movie from, I think it's 1999, called You've Got Mail with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. And they're on the, you know, it was a trendy movie back in 1999. And they're both logging on to their email and listening to the, oh God, what was that thing called? A modem, right? The thing that made the squirrely noises before you came on. This is like 19, it was only, what, 13 years ago, and the technology just seems so kind of quaint. And all they were doing was doing email back then. There were no smartphones, there wasn't probably even the amount of internet, you know, web browsing as we have today. Just in those 13 years, look what we've gone to, where, you know, we have our computers, but we also have, you know, our smartphones, where texting didn't, I don't think texting existed back then. So, oh, it's just inundated. And the other thing, I was having a conversation over holidays with my brother, who's just come up with a texting app. He doesn't have texting on his phone, but he found an app for his iPad. And again, like you, I'm trying to explain the ethics of texting and whether it's or the etiquette of texting is whether it's okay to text at a dinner table across from somebody. I'm saying, well, it depends on your age, and you know, it is somewhat acceptable now to do that. So It's completely changed, and it's really begun to affect our eyes more and more. And we're about to start a crusade, basically, on how to deal with this, how to teach people how to deal with it. So it's a very pertinent question for us.
It certainly doesn't seem to be going in the other direction. I mean, an easy answer is to say, don't use the computer, which seems to be the only, you know, the only real help that we seem to be getting from anyone. And obviously that, you know, that's not the case. And that's certainly, you know, obviously us running an internet company, there's just no way that would even work for us. So we've certainly got an invested interest in helping people out to survive, you know, our modern day lives with the computer, especially for those that need to spend long hours on the computer. And I mean, and there's certainly several things that we can look at, and we could do a whole, which we, you know, will do in the future, you know, a whole course on workshops on how to use the computer properly. But just briefly, I think we're going to give some highlights here on some good tips that you can do in order to use the computer. And I guess starting from the very beginning, the best thing you can do is to have the least amount of strain as possible before you start using the computer in the first place.
Yeah,
and in particular,
go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, with my case, remember I talked about if I don't do my exercises for a few days and I try and use the computer, then it's a real strain on my eyes to use the computer. So by doing your outside program, you know, doing your hour a day, setting that time aside. In particular, if you know you're going to be using the computer a lot during the day, doing a nice palming session before you start even using the computer is already a great tip to get you off on your way before you even get going.
Yeah, I think you've actually just started a good process to talk about this. Let's talk about it chronologically in the day. So you and I both get up in the morning and we do our palming in the morning. And in a lot of ways, we're doing that, as you say, to prepare for the work we're going to spend on the computer. So that's maybe step number one, is in the morning. And we actually recommend doing palming in the morning. It seems counterintuitive because you think you would do it after the work or after the stress. But actually, your eyes are more receptive to palming, to relaxing, when you've already slept and sort of gotten some of the stress out. You obviously need to do it after as well, but it's very valuable to do it ahead of time as well. So, yeah.
Initially, when we teach these exercises, they're to counterbalance the symptoms of a problem. You know, say like somebody comes to us with eye strain, then you know, then you're looking to do these exercises to overcome that eye strain, or if somebody has difficulty seeing in the distance, then we do these exercises in order to overcome that and start seeing in the distance. But when you reach a certain point, it becomes preventing the symptoms instead of overcoming them. And obviously that takes time to get to that point, as well as with the palming, I guess, things like the peripheral vision exercise as well, to make sure that you've really got that rest. Because when you are on the computer, you're really working that central vision. So there's certain exercises. Go on.
Yeah, let me get back to my systematic way of. I'm attached now to the systematic way of explaining it. So now you've done your palming. So let's talk about now. Like, you're walking up to your computer. What should your computer look like? And to me, you know, place your computer somewhere where you can turn away from the screen and look as far away as possible. So that may be step two. You've done your palming. Now let's make sure your computer is in a place where you can look away into the distance. Granted, if you live in if you work in a giant office complex with cubicles and no windows, you've got to improvise, and maybe you're looking down a hall, or you're looking as far, find a way you can look as far away as possible. So that's the way your computer is set up. And then obviously after that, we want you to have good ergonomics, which there's a lot of literature about that out there, but we also want to make the reason we care so much, other than we want to save the rest of your body, is we want good blood flow to your head and neck to nourish your eyes, so that we're not cutting off the nourishing qualities of your blood flow to your eyes. So that's another reason you want to have, you know, a straight back and a loose neck, loose shoulders. So let's just say now that's step number two, is your computer's in a good place, your body's in a good place, so you have blood flow. And now you're using the computer, and now I think you're right. Maybe you have your peripheral vision papers sitting next to the computer, the three sides of the paper.
Yeah, I did mean beforehand.
Cool, go for it.
Not just, like, for example, I do my program first thing in the morning. And I've been palming, I've been pretty busy, and I've not been able to fit in as much as I would like to over these last few days. So I've only just been doing the palming, and I noticed that I was doing the palming, but I was still feeling a little bit of fatigue. So today I focused more on doing half palming and half periphery, and that meant that I engaged my periphery that much more, so that when I did use the computer, it was a bit easier because my periphery was already engaged. So let's say this is someone with myopia, then they want to do their distance looking as well, because, you know, whatever somebody's symptoms are, if they can work with those before they're going to put an effort on their eyes, then they're going to be in a better place to begin with before they even start.
Yeah,
makes sense. But certainly, like what you were saying, and not everyone has that sort of time, and obviously palming is deeply resting the eyes. You know, for myself and people with peripheral conditions, and it, you know, it's obviously exacerbated, so it's probably more important for me to do peripheral vision exercises before I use the computer. But yeah, just like you say, so you've got your computer set up, and you can look out the window, ideally the furthest point, and then sort of having your toolkit, I guess you could say, around your table. Like, I look at my table now, and I've got my obstruction glasses next to me. I've got a small piece of paper that I would put in the periphery from time to time, and then I've got, you know, the three sized pieces of paper. I've got a couple of tennis balls that I use to do a little bit of self-massage on the back or the legs. There's all these tools that you can put around you that help you do the exercises whilst you're actually on the computer.
Right. So, and if you think about it, it's, yeah. And if you kind of analyze it a little bit, basically what we're if you think about what you're doing with the computer, you can sort of think your way through why we're suggesting this. Because when you're at the computer reading text, or looking at images for that matter, you're using your central vision at a fixed distance. So everything Will is saying is like using your periphery, looking into the distance, or counteracting those two tendencies. And then you're undoubtedly not doing great things for your neck and shoulders. So again, the tennis balls, anything you can do to loosen up your neck and shoulders. So it all makes sense when you really start thinking about it. It's not something magical formula we're coming up with here. So, yeah.
And so I guess going through it chronological to make it easier to understand, these are all things that you can do whilst actually using the computer. These aren't things that you have to take breaks from. Like for me, I've made sure that there's a window over the top of my computer, so all I have to do is look up, I can see in the distance, and then I can look back down at my computer. The obstruction glasses, if I feel that I'm starting to work, if my stronger eye is starting to dominate, then I just put the glasses on for a couple of minutes, or you know, whatever, and until it calms out again, and then I take the glasses back off again. So this isn't necessarily taking breaks. This is trying to come up with ways to help your eyes whilst you're actually using the computer.
Right. Yeah. And the obstruction glasses, I forgot about that, also are counteracting our tendency under stress to ignore our non-dominant eye and only use our dominant eye. So, yeah.
So then actually taking breaks then.
There you go. Yep.
We would certainly recommend, well, for many reasons, really, at least once an hour taking a 10-minute break.
Right.
I know when I spent a lot of time at university, they talked about doing 40-minute stints of study, because that's how long the brain can fully absorb. So even on a mental level, it's good to take a 10-minute break every hour. Mm-hmm. On those 10-minute breaks, it's a good idea to stand and stretch. If you think you're sitting for long periods of time, your muscles are getting tight in that position. So to stand and do an opposite movement, so bringing the leg back behind you, and like a quadricep stretch. If anyone is unsure of that, then they can go to our website, go to the exercises tab, and look for the stretches under quadricep. And that's sort of getting moving going again. I've got a foam tube or an exercise ball that I go and just do that for 10 minutes. It doesn't have to be necessarily an eye exercise, because that in itself is helping to get blood flow to the eyes around the body. And it's also helping you break those visual patterns, which I guess is something we should talk a little bit about.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you could do a little bit of palming every hour, too. It sort of depends on your particular visual system. For me, I would do a little bit of palming. Yeah,
Yeah, definitely. I if I'm not doing body stuff, then I would either go and do distance looking out the window. My favorite, I think, is sunning.
I agree with that, yeah. If you could get outside and do some sunning, or at least skying. And then maybe alternate that with palming. There's sort of a sun palm sun thing we do, where you do sunning for, say, 5 minutes, turn around and do a quick palm, and then go back to doing sunning.
We do actually do that in the Express sunning kit.
Oh, we do? Okay.
Thinking about it, that's one of the reasons why we did time the kit to 10 minutes, is so you can just press play on one of those exercises, so you don't even necessarily have to think about it. You know, just set a timer for 50 minutes on your computer or on your phone, or a cooking timer, and just every 50 minutes just press play. The eye rotations is also a good one. You know, maybe even something outside your regular program. You know, it's nice to break it up if you're spending lengthy periods of time, but certainly in particular, the exercises you want to look at for computer use is distance looking, because you're looking near all the time, so it means you're putting a lot of strain, you're rounding the lens, you're overly using the ciliary body, the muscles there, so you're tiring them out. So distance looking is essential. The peripheral vision exercise, because it helps relax the central vision and helps stimulate the peripheral vision, which is what we switch off when we focus centrally all the time at the computer. And palming, because you're resting the optic nerve, you're resting the retina. And I guess also sunning, because you want to activate those cone cells, activate all the retina and get it stimulated again, and also work that pupil so that when you do come back down to the computer, your vision is actually better off than when you left it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I think that is that, yeah, so I think we've got, yeah, I've got the brakes, and I think kind of covers our computer use. Well, obviously, yeah. at the end of the day, we hope you go home and do some palming as well. So that's the only thing. And obviously, doing all your eye exercises for your particular condition will help your eyes in general. So, yeah, I think that's it for the computer.
And again, periphery. One thing that I said before about the habit, when you do the exercises and as you start doing them on a regular basis, you start building a stronger relationship with your eyes, which sounds very, very foreign to a lot of people. But anyone that's done exercises for any lengthy period will understand what I mean. And when we look at a computer, a lot of the time, or reading or anything from near, we tend to do it under strain. And certainly yourself, you would have experienced this with your Photoshop days.
Oh yes, I used to have dreams. I knew I'd been doing Photoshop too much when I would have dreams, and in my dreams that you know the menus would come down, and I was like, okay, I've spent too much time on the computer.
And you know, when you spend that amount of time, you know, you create a stare, your sympathetic nervous system kicks in, your fight or flight, you start blinking less, you breathe in a more shallow way. So you start creating this negative pattern on how you actually use the computer. And it's very, very important that we learn, and this is something that society hasn't taught us yet because it doesn't know, but is to learn how to use the computer in a way that isn't under stress, is actually okay for the eyes, instead of getting so absorbed and stressed with our work that we ignore our vision, which eventually leads to strain.
Yeah, and you were talking about the Express, and we did create the Express for people who didn't have a lot of time and for people to get into the eye exercise programs quickly. So, but I think we also sort of consider it a beginner's product or a way of starting into eye exercises. And eventually we would, as people become aficionados in eye exercises, we want them to develop what you were talking about, the sensitivity to all the way their eyes feel, the way their shoulder, you know, the whole visual system, all the things that feed into seeing. We want them to become more aware of those things so that instead of completely relying on a four-exercise program, they might go, peripheral vision, I've been staring centrally. It really feels like I need to stimulate my periphery. And they'd almost feel the need for that. For right now, I think it's good to just follow a program and to know why these exercises are good for you. But eventually, I think you will develop the sensitivity you're talking about, and you'll know which exercise you need to do at that point. So, yeah.
Yeah, talking about the long hour stints, say with the Photoshop, I know it's very challenging when you're really into something. Obviously. We did it for many hours creating the website, that you don't want to break and you don't want to get up and go away. But really, one thing I've noticed from incorporating these exercises is that you can go longer and your productivity is so much more better when you take those short breaks. You force yourself. I personally find that I can keep going for longer stints if I make sure that I make those breaks, I rest my eyes, also my brain, get the blood flowing. You should find that your productivity will actually be better, and you can prolong it throughout the whole day instead of just fighting every day.
And taking and then, those 20 minutes ahead, you know, doing your 40-minute program will also lead to productivity. It's tempting to eliminate that program as well because, oh, I'm under pressure. I need to get this done. But as you say, you're just going to lower your productivity by doing that. So
yeah. And I think, so we're certainly recommending, you know, have good visual habits whilst you're doing it, looking up at the screen every now and then, maybe every 10, 15 minutes. You know, make sure that you're looking up. You're incorporating all the little tools that we've given you whilst you're on the computer. And then every hour, take a 10-minute break. Certainly every couple of hours, if you haven't done so already, you want to get up, walk around, go outside, do some sunning, you know, something away from the actual computer. And then, you know, hopefully the individual is having lunch, making sure that when you have your lunch break, it's an actual break.
You
know, not on your break going and then watching a movie on your iPhone, or you know, actually having a break and go for a walk or whatever.
Oh, I just wanted to say one thing, since the people listening are mainly Express people. You mentioned obstruction glasses, and they may not even, you'll see on the website, you'll see plenty of our obstruction glasses, and you can make them. But what we provided in the Express was the small piece of paper. So in that, if that's all you have, then just tape the small piece of paper to the bridge of your nose at one side so that it covers the central vision of your dominant eye. That's the solution there. So
yeah, that's a good point. The obstruction glasses, really, we just take an old pair of sunglasses, pop out one lens, and cover the other lens with tape, and it obstructs one of the eyes. So whatever your stronger eye is, that's obviously what you want to obstruct. All right, great. Well, have you got a question?
I do. So this question is, when I am in dim light, I have a central spot where I can't see anything. What's going on with this? Can I use a flashing light to exercise the rods in this area? And then how can I stimulate the rods and not the cones here? And there's a few misconceptions going on. Well, first of all, there are, in the central vision, you mainly have cones and only a few rods. There are, you know, as you get closer and closer to your central vision, the number of rods decreases and decreases till there are none in the central, most central area, the fovea. So there's the macula, and then within the macula is the fovea, which is the most central area of your eye where you see the clearest. And the cones are what sees clearly in that area. And the cones are need bright light to see. So within the retina, there's these 120 million rods, which are mainly in the periphery. They decrease towards the center, and then the cones begin. And the cones and rods, there's a mixture of them as you get close to the macula, and then it turns into mainly cones. And then when you hit the fovea, the very central part, it's all cones. So it's a little confusing we've had other communication from this person, and it sounds like the central area they're talking about is relatively large, not just the fovea. So we would say that the first thing we would say is you really need to go to an ophthalmologist to find out what's going on. One response we've had here, one possibility, is this person is merely seeing the realities of the fact that cones don't function in dim light and rods do. But as we read more of this communication, Will and I agreed that that's probably not going on, that it's probably something else. Is that right?
I think it was the astrologers that first noticed that that they had to look to the side of their vision in order to look at the stars. If they looked directly at the stars, then it would disappear. And if anyone was to know the size of the fovea, the detailed part that Rich is talking about, if you put both thumbs up in front of you and place them together, that's about the size of the fovea. It's about 3% of your total peripheral field. That's the 3% of your whole visual field, and it's actually only about 1% of the entire retina itself. So it is a small spot. So, but what we notice is this person then mentioned, because obviously stars are very small, right? They're small enough that if you were to look up, then you know that would lead us to believe that you're just observing that. But if it's a larger area, then that certainly leads us to believe that it could be a condition, something that certainly needs to be diagnosed by a specialist. And then that way, once you've got that diagnosis, you can start, you know, working on what that condition is.
Yeah, and I was just realizing this is why we really need the cooperation of people going to their ophthalmologist. Because once we know what it is, then we can design an exercise that both rests that area and then stimulates it. That tends to be our strategy. So actually, you have a client who's similar, has a similar response. We don't know that this person has exactly the same thing at all. Mm-hmm. But we're discussing ways of, and this your client has a similar problem, and we were just sort of coming up with ways of stimulating that area. So we've actually come up with a new exercise that we're going to try and demonstrate in our next podcast. So my point is, once you know exactly what the problem is, then you can use your logic in some ways and common sense to come up with some way of exercising it. But you really need to know what's weak or what's what the condition is.
Yeah, and the nature. Understand the nature of the beast in order to tame it. And to be able to work it. So certainly our advice to that individual is to go get checked. Regardless, I guess, with this new exercise that we came up with, it was the idea of, so we were trying to figure out, how do you stimulate rods in the dark when cones in the dark when it's rods that it's the rods that mainly function in low levels of light, and that's why, you know, when you're in the dark, the cones go to sleep. The cones need those high levels, the 10,000 watt that the sun gives out, to be fully activated, and the rods kind of go to sleep. And then when you're in the dark, the rods can pick up the real low levels of lighting, and the cones go to sleep. It's an antagonistic response that we're all very lucky that we have. So,
I'm just going to explain a little further. In your client, really what's going on is the cones are fine. Well, not fine, maybe, but they're functional during the day in brighter light, but then they switch off sooner than they should in light. How do you deal with that? Yeah, go ahead.
The problem with the cones is that they're functioning, but not to their fullest. And
exactly,
it's obviously being, you know, it's funny. Say for example, with my condition with RP, you know, I could be in a social group. No one would ever really know that I would have a condition, or you know, I can function fine in the world. But as soon as it goes dark, then my condition comes to light. Excuse the pun. So you know, it's not always black and white. These conditions have different ways of showing us that they're there. The brain tends to ignore it because we don't want to acknowledge what's weak in us, and we want to just get on with our day and survive the best way we can. So obviously, for someone that notices in the dark that they're missing their central vision when it's dark, well, then just don't be in the dark and you've solved your problem.
yeah, right.
But what we're saying here with our work is that you want to try and work what's weak and sort of face your fears, so to speak, and really work in that level. So it's a real challenge with the cones, because the cones really function in light, and if you're in the dark using a bright flashing light, then obviously you're using those cones, but you're using it on that level that they normally function anyway.
Right. So that, yeah, we discussed the flashing lights. We were just trying to figure this out today. And, well, the bright flashing light is basically putting those cones, using those cones at a light intensity level that they do already function at. So we were like coming up, how can we challenge the cones to work at a dimmer light level? So, I just ordered these dimmable clamp lights, you know, the lights you...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I found it on Amazon, a little clamp light, just a regular light bulb, and it's got a dimmer on the back. So we're going to play with dimming a light down. You play with your client to see if we can get it to hit that threshold where the cones don't function anymore, and then just dial it in, you know, exactly at that level where the cones stop functioning, and play with that edge of, you know, where they stop functioning. And that's our process. So
yeah, in order to strengthen it. Now you mention it, actually, I've always thought anyone that does spend long time at the computer, I've always had the idea of putting, and I've done this a few times, putting one of those clamp lights either side of the computer, sort of in the extreme periphery, and have them flashing, or putting something flashing in the periphery. It keeps your attention on the computer. You're stimulating the periphery whilst looking at the computer, which is kind of nice. But certainly, yeah, it's nice to have that challenge to come up with something new.
Yeah. Enjoy.
I guess also by doing it in the dark, you are at least focusing on those cells, those flashing lights. I guess you are stimulating the cones to some extent, but you know we always want to figure these things out in their entirety.
Yeah. Yep.
So certainly that's what we recommend for that individual is to go to the ophthalmologist and get an official diagnosis, and then secondly to get a dimmer light, something that's dim enough that you can kind of see but not really, and then try and stimulate those central cone cells that way.
Yep. All right. Do you have another question for us?
Yeah, we've got a question here, It's a nice long one. We like our long questions because it gets our brains working. Let me try and summarize in my head. This individual, we answered the question last week on their coaching call, so they're sort of responding a little bit to that and giving a little bit of feedback, which is great because that's what we asked for. And what we, in my memory banks, this person had eye strain last time we talked. It was the question, maybe you remember, Richard, we answered it talking about the palming and trying to figure out where that level of eye strain is, you know, how do you relationship with your eye strain. And one of the things that we recommended was putting a cold compress on the eyes a couple of times. So this individual says that it didn't feel that good when they did the cold. When they removed it, they noticed their eyes had a hard time focusing on objects, even if they were very close. I didn't want to continue with it for an entire week because it made me worry it might make my condition work or do something else to my eyes. But it was worth a try. So, first off, excellent there that this individual noticed that their eyes didn't feel that great, and they decided to stop doing it. My initial response to this would be either to try hot, cold, where you would put a cold towel over your eyes and then put a warm towel and then put a cold towel, and that's going to bring more blood to the area, but it's also going to reduce any inflammation. Now some people, it's funny, some people don't like cold towels simply because they don't like the cold on their eyes or on their face, and it's normally a good indication on on what's right for you that at that point in time. You could try just doing a warm towel instead of the cold and see if that feels any better instead of the cold.
Yeah. I mean, in general, the reason we tried the cold first, the cold reduces inflammation and hot sometimes exacerbates inflammation. So we were sort of assuming that under strain that the eyes would be slightly inflamed. And that's why we just sort of conceptually to know why we recommended that and why normally it's a good thing.
Yeah,
but it isn't always a solution.
How cold this towel, it shouldn't be, it's probably only as cold as the tap. I also tend to only really wet the central part of the towel, so I don't feel like I'm getting completely wet.
Doused,
all over my face. The eyes had a hard time focusing. The only thing for me with this is that this person might be noticing that the difficult to focus is that the eyes are fatigued. And when our eyes are fatigued, it's difficult to focus on stuff. So, but what we do as humans and trying to force our way through everything is we force a focus, we force a fuse, which is, not the best thing to do. That creates more strain. So I've noticed for me, one time I made myself go on a vision holiday. I did 5 days without using my central vision on the computer or on the TV or, I had a complete time off. I didn't read anything. And when I went back to using the computer after about half an hour, I noticed that things were sort of getting a little bit blurry. And I could counterbalance that by working my it's a very subtle feeling, but you can feel yourself exert your eyes to the point where they're allowed to see clearer. And obviously that's not a natural thing to do and actually shows the eyes are strained. So I would see for this individual to play with that a little bit and see if the fact that something is blurry is because they feel relaxed. I mean, if their eyes don't feel relaxed, then
right.
Maybe not. I guess we don't do the maybe try the convergence exercise. You could try doing the cold towel and then maybe do the presbyopia exercise on the eye exercise express and then look at the computer and see if that issue is there.
That
might be one way.
I kind of agree with you. I think sometimes, even after palming, sometimes if you relax the eyes, sometimes they've so relaxed you don't do your normal stressful habit of looking at something to clarify it. And that includes what you're talking about, convergence, bringing your eyes together to a single point. So you're just sort of like kind of a little dopey relaxed, and so your eyes don't focus immediately the way they used to under strain. And I think we both are saying that's not necessarily a horrible thing. Just let it, just go with it a little bit and it'll come back. And don't immediately assume you've done the wrong thing if you immediately have a little bit of blur. The other thing I wonder about is the pressure of the cloth on the eyes sometimes, and just the water in the eyes sometimes gets rid of the tear film. So it takes a while for your eyes to sort of restabilize and get the tear film back on the eyes. And certainly be sure they're not putting too much pressure on the eyes with the cloth. So
yeah, I mean,
that's
you definitely
another
want to have your eyes
possibility.
Closed, when you've got the cold towel,
and that's maybe
it,
a reason not to make it so wet. Yeah, too. So yeah,
maybe. I think I would recommend this person to try the cold towel, then try the convergence exercise and see if it's a little bit easier beforehand. They say difficult focusing, even if they're very close. Ironically, the closer an object is, the more difficult it is to focus on. You're actually going to more of an effort. when it's that close.
Right.
Because you really are converging. Maybe try doing the Kul Tao and then look at something in the distance and see if it's blurry out there as well.
Mm-hmm. Because that would, if it's clear in the distance, then it would be a convergence issue. And it's not, if it's clear in the distance and then when you look really close you have trouble, it could be, like you say, the muscles, the convergence muscles on the insides of the eyes are a little slack from relaxing, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that if you did the presbyopia exercise, it would sort of put them into shape, sort of thing. So, yeah.
But, I mean, certainly a cold Tao shouldn't really be doing any sort of damage. I mean, all of this stuff, you know, everyone's an individual, and it's important to do exactly what this person's already done, which is to not do it because they were unsure. So what we're saying now is play with it a little bit. Maybe focus on more if you have eye strain, and then do the Kul Tao. Just feel if you have less strain afterwards, not whether things are clearer or not. Just do you feel as if there's less strain? If not, then try the warm Tao, and then also try the cold Tao and see if that makes a difference. So we go on and say, in the coaching call you mentioned you were curious about how long it took me to first improve my vision. I think it was about 6 months from when I started reducing the amount of times I wore my glasses, which is great when I last measured. Maybe it's also nice to know that at the time when I started doing the Bates method, my glasses were almost 3 years old. So I think it's reasonable to assume my condition was even worse than the strength of my glasses at the time.
Good
point.
That is a good point.
So that's great that they've been working at that and playing with it. And you can kind of tell as we go on here that this person has been doing the exercises for a while. I did a lot of palming after the coaching call when I felt some pain around my eyes while doing it. So if I understand it right, that is strain and the feeling I get when I'm at the computer when I'm not paying attention to my posture, overworking the eyes and making the eyes do effort. So, yeah, that's exactly what we were talking about there. It's a hidden strain.
Right.
And there's nothing worse than a hidden strain.
Yeah, it's what you really should be feeling while you're doing it, but you don't, because we all kind of ignore it. And then when you do the palming, sort of residual strain coming to the surface. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's an unfortunate consequence of palming, because we often get this like, well, I don't feel good when I do the palming. Well, eventually you will, but in the beginning you might feel this sort of residual strain surfacing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that's the point, is to get to a place where you don't have strain so that you feel when it's coming on, like when I was talking about obstructing the stronger eye. You know, when I'm on the computer, I can feel my stronger eye starting to dominate. Now, that didn't just happen overnight. If you'd asked me, you know, 4 years ago, I don't think I even knew necessarily what my stronger eye was 4 or 5 years ago, let alone know when one was starting to dominate over the other. Right. So it's along the similar lines. You might also notice it's not just palming. It might be if you do the peripheral vision exercise. When you go to use your central vision again, you might feel it strain. I guess another example, somewhat relevant, is if you palm and then you turn your indoor lights on and it sort of creates a horrible feeling on the eyes, which is what those halogen lights do to you. Whereas if you're just in that poor lighting for several hours, you don't even notice it.
That's a good analogy. So it's just
sort of bringing that awareness to the eyes, and I think just play with the palming, play with, you know, any exercise that will help rest the eyes, like the peripheral vision, like the distance looking, the sunning, obstruction, and start feeling where that level is strain is, so that when you feel it start coming on again, you're then able to overcome it.
Yep.
Okay.
That's good.
So just when I was writing this email, I paused to do some distance looking. Very good.
Yeah.
This is one of our perfect clients, I think, Richard.
Yep.
While doing the distance looking, I think something fell into place, and I'd like to share my thoughts. Again, this person obviously knows us and knows that we love this philosophical side of our eye exercises.
Yeah.
He even says here, it's turning slightly philosophical here, but maybe that's because I'm looking at the window all the time. So great. we certainly encourage that anyway. Anyone that listens to our podcast know that we tend to go on a little bit. Going to ask how many times I should look at a different object and how far apart the object should be. But then I realized that this kind of thinking is actually a big part of my condition. Mm. I also tend to trace the objects as quickly as possible, kind of sweeping across them. And then I realize my entire lifestyle is like that. My personality is to sweep across everything. I do, and it has to be perfect at the same time. Maybe conditions like mine start with scanning across objects too quickly, and it leads to trying to see the whole world at once. I wonder if the core of the exercises is to help us change our personality through our vision. That makes any sense. Well, spot on there, really.
Yeah, we like the way you're thinking. Yeah. Wow, we could go on for another two. I could go on for 2 hours affirming what he said. he's totally right.
Pushing our vision improvement buttons here, but certainly, I mean, this really is the core of the exercises here. Is instead of, you know, a lot of our work is not necessarily treating the symptoms; it's treating the cause of the symptoms. So, thinking on it just on that base level, you know, what is the cause of something? Nearsightedness. We know the cause is looking near for extended periods of time, and that's not just as children, that's even as adults. So the question is, what is causing you to stare for long periods of time? And of course, that's, you know, for some people, that's their personality, is plowing through things and really fixating on something. And then you could argue with things like what this individual is talking about, you know, things being fuzzy is just sweeping over things, and that's certainly, as a society, we tend to do as well. We tend to talk more about this with things like activating the macula, how we've switched off our macula because we don't look at details anymore. And the job of the macula is to see fine small detail, and I guess a good example is if you read a book, you don't care about the individual letters. You just want to bring in as much information as possible, in, you know, as quick as possible. And we don't stop and look at details. Well, that's the job of the macula, is to pick up that small detail and to take the time to look at them.
Yeah. So I have to bring in my philosophy a little bit here, and that. I like what you're saying. The other, my own experience I wanted to bring in here was when I meditate more, that I noticed that I have this. I'm very similar to this person in the sense that I tend to sweep over things. Mm-hmm. I think we have similar perfectionistic personalities. Anyway, but when I meditate and when I'm more focused, I notice I can spend more time looking. I'm not so quick to shift over things. So that's sort of the connection between mind and vision that he's referring to, that there really is a strong connection between how you look and the state of your mind. And then what you're talking about, the details, too. Again, when I'm more focused, my mind is more clear, I've meditated more, I can actually spend the time looking at details. It's not just a visual system issue. It's a mind issue, too. And partly that's, you know, our society, like you say, has pushed our vision and our minds away from spending the time to look at something. And it's not only bad for our vision, but it's bad for our minds probably too, that we're so rushed to and so focused on information and not on enjoying our vision, you know, enjoying what's presenting itself in front of our eyes. So
it's almost an instant gratification society that we've got now. We want everything now, whether it's wanting to buy a piece of furniture, whereas before you had to spend years saving up for it. Now you just stick it on a credit card because you just want it now. You know, if you're going to read a book, you know, you don't, you just want to get through it. If you're looking at a scenery, you don't want to take the time. I mean, I'm even worse. I notice now, instead of enjoying a scenery, I take a picture of it.
Right. And, she can enjoy it later, except we never do.
Yeah. So I found, you know, just checking out all these wonders of the world, I was spending more time taking pictures of the thing than I was actually taking the time out to actually enjoy it whilst I was there. And I think also it would be interesting to pair the vision up with personality types. I mean, certainly we identify probably through this vision stuff that you and I are two different personality types. I'm very central focused and just want to plow through things, and you're more peripheral based, wanting to work around things. And I mean, if you look at our vision, I you know, all I have is, not all I have, I really use my central vision, really work my central vision, and have poor periphery, and you have good periphery and your central vision isn't as good. So certainly a lot in that.
We could talk about our personalities, but it might be dangerous.
Ironically, though, one thing that I do think about this is where he says that he moves across objects. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Our eyes, it's called saccadic movements. If this person wants to Google saccadic movements or Yahoo, and you know, the eye wants to move from place to place to place, and not just focus on one spot for a long period of time, which is, of course, what we do when we stare at the computer. So it's not bad to be moving from point to point.
Right.
Originally, they say here that the original question would be, you know, how quickly do you move from place to place? And
right,
I think I would probably, I mean, we do actually guide you through in the distance looking exercise.
That's
true. We actually
do
guide through our pace of shifting. I mean, I sort of fluctuate myself. I might maybe for a minute or two do some quick shifting, and then maybe, you know, from different points in the horizon, and then maybe I would look at details in one particular object, but still moving from place to place. You know, I think it's good to vary, especially as you want to keep the mind as engaged as possible.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe this goes back to our original ebook content. If you think about it, if you were in nature, this is another way of looking at it. Well, at times you would be shifting boom, 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 boom across your surroundings to maybe check out, you know, for danger or prey or something like. So you do that kind of movement, and we want your eyes to be able to focus quickly doing that. And in that sense, you're not staring at something. You're sort of shifting quickly from object to object. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be a point where you're looking up at a fruit in the tree, and you're studying the color and the spots on the fruit, and you're moving slowly from point to point on that piece of fruit. So both of those are natural functions of your eye. So we want you probably to be doing a little of each. And you can imagine now our modern life is we don't do any of that. We just look at a screen and read information. So you're right. There's a variety of shifting. Yeah.
I guess you could think, picture Caveman Dave on the top of a mound, looking out over his plane, looking for some lions that are going to eat him, or some animals that he's going to eat. You know, he's going to be moving from place to place, and then he might see something, and then
he will
shift on that one object to try and figure out what that is, gauge its distance, where it's moving to. But then if it moved away, or you know, or whatever, then they would go back to scanning the horizon again. I like doing one of my things that I enjoy doing is what I would call the etch-a-sketcher, sort of outlining the horizon. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy doing that.
Me too.
And sort of going atop it, over it. But that's also, that's not just moving eyes left to right. You're really trying to draw that horizon with your eyes. You know, even and if that's, say, you're looking at a tree, you go around the branches and the leaves and stuff.
Right, and I think that is where the state of mind comes in. That's where the state of mind comes in. Like, if I'm in a distracted mood, it's difficult for me to do that. So that is where the state of mind, you could pay attention to that. So, yeah.
Yeah, we would certainly love to know when this individual plays with this a lot more, because this is really, the deeper you get into the vision improvement, obviously when we start off, we talk about the eye exercises and, you know, doing the eye exercise, but it really does go a lot deeper, and it's sort of the great thing about vision improvement, but it's also its downfall because people don't want to see their psychology, they don't want to improve their psyche, and it's a lot easier to be detached than it is to see what it is. So a lot of the time we do notice people can't do the eye exercises because they come up against those barriers, which is themselves. Moving on, there's also a new question that came up during the holidays, so we're really glad that you were thinking about this over your holidays, which is great. Why do you think they stopped researching the Bates method if so many people had a positive experience with it? Well, again, I think we could go on for several hours on this question, but I think, I don't know, it's difficult without being too cynical. I guess you need
I'll
to
be
ask...
cynical.
I guess try to avoid being too cynical, and I'm sure we will go into it. To ask the question, who does the research?
Where does the money come from? When we
use the words research, we never really question who's actually doing it. I guess we just have this idea that there's this global scientific community, this one thing that does this research, and then if the research is proven right, then that's how it is, and if it's proven wrong, then it doesn't work. But it's really not, you know, the more time I've spent in America and looking into the drug system here, do I realize that that's unfortunately really not the case. You really have to ask yourself who does the research and who really benefits from the Bates method being successful. Because the only, and this is my mind, the only people that can afford to research something is a company or a business,
right?
And there isn't really a Bates company or an eye exercise company that could make enough money, I would imagine, to then be able to afford further studies in it. And also, I mean, there are research in eye exercises, but the scientific community would argue that it's not scientific enough, or you need to do a double blind study that nobody knows they're doing the exercise, like some sort of...
Yeah. I know.
And really, the scientific model doesn't necessarily pair up with the self-improvement model and working with your own body naturally. Like we highlighted here, there is a philosophical side, there is an emotional side to this, as well as the anatomical side of it all. So it's a bit more complex. We certainly, a big thing that we're aiming to do here with our work is we're trying to reach out to so many people globally that we want to be able to start doing our own research. But obviously that will be qualitative research, gaining people's right. experiences, and then putting that forward and doing that as research, and eventually being able to come up with enough quantitative research. You know, this is why we encourage, another reason we want people to go to their ophthalmologists, get their eyes tested, you know, get their eyes scanned, and then they go away for a year or two, they do their eye exercises, they go back, and then, you know, they've got proof that it's worked. I mean, just like what I was saying when I came off the aeroplane, and you know, I came back to a phone call from somebody that got a reduction in their prescription. Yep. Instead of, you know, why isn't the optometrist running off to the American Ophthalmology Association and saying, you know, I had this client here that had X prescription, and now she's got less prescription. How is this?
Yeah.
She said she was doing eye exercises. We need to do some research in these.
Sorry, we're laughing cynically.
wouldn't that be a great world? But I'm sure you've got your own take on this as well, Richard. Why do you feel that there's not as much research and debates as there should be?
It's as simple as money. That's all I'll say. That's it.
All right, so then we go on. Also, when an optometrist examines your eyes, they start from your old glasses. I notice that when I put on my glasses, my eyes are back to being used to them very quickly. Do you think that starting from zero is better for an eye exam? And what's your take on that, Richard?
Wait, do that one more time for me. So they take the old glasses, they measure the old prescription, and then what happens next? Sorry.
He says, I notice that when I put on my glasses, my eyes are back to being used to them very quickly. Now, I'm not too sure whether he means that he's got new glasses.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And then
or
when
the
he puts on
ones.
His old glasses, his eyes adjust back, or whether he's not worn glasses for a while, and his eyes feel like, you know, pretty good, and then when he puts his glasses on, his eyes adjust to that vision.
That's what I think he's saying, is that he doesn't wear them for a while. Boy, I'm a little confused on this. Well, I'll just answer it both ways. I mean, in my experience, when you get new glasses, it's been a long time, but that in general, they don't feel good when you put on the new glasses. They feel weird and too strong. And the doctor tells you, don't worry about it, you'll get used to them. Which really means your eyes are adjusting to a prescription that they didn't like, and now they're adapting to that. So that's a negative, that your eyes are adapting to a stronger prescription is just proving that we're using stronger crutches, essentially, and making ours weaker and weaker in response to the prescription we put in front of them. So that's one way, if that's what he's referring to. The other way might be he's not wearing glasses for a long period of time because he's being a practitioner of eye improvement. And then he puts them on and they adapt. Boy, that's not my experience either. I have found they feel too strong when I put them on, again, the new pair of glasses. That's been my experience.
And he does say at the end here, do you think that when starting from zero is better for an eye exam? I mean, it's generally been my observation that they do start from zero. But of course, with optometrists, they don't believe that vision can improve. So why, you know, that if they already know what your prescription is, you can only be worse. You can never be better. So you can sort of.
I went to see an optometrist in San Francisco who did believe eyes could get better, and he did the same thing, Dr. Lee. He took my old glasses, put them in a machine, measured to see what they were, because I didn't know anymore, and then used that as a starting point. So I don't know. I don't think it's such a bad thing to do, because usually when our eyes improve, even when they improve, they're doing it gradually, you know, maybe a half a diopter or something at a time. So I don't think wrong about that.
Well, the problem is, though, is it's like they say, if a you know, a researcher will get the results that they're looking for. If an optometrist knows you're a minus point, a minus 2.5,
right,
there's no way he's going to think that you're a minus 2 or a minus 1.5. He's got in his head. That's what you are. I guess in theory, if whatever you read on the chart counts. One thing that I like to suggest is going to somewhere to get your eyes test somewhere new, away from an optometrist that already knows your prescription. I think you can do that here in America, right? You can sort of go into any local place and just get your eyes tested.
Someone will even do it for free, I think.
I mean, it would be interested, you know, if for your next eye exam, you know, spend a good few months doing your eye exercises, make it a point to do, you know, a good hour a day, and then, you know, maybe book an exam somewhere other than where you used to go. Do it for a couple of months, make sure you're nice and rested before you do your test, do your eye exercises, and then go in as a new person, so to speak, someone that doesn't even wear glasses, and then go in, do the eye test, and see what prescription they give you.
Yeah, yeah, good idea.
Certainly some very interesting points there. That's
gonna
be difficult for us to answer as much as we would like.
Yep. But we like the way this guy's thinking, so.
Yeah, so thank you, Tom, for some great questions there, and we certainly look forward to hearing back on some more of your responses, and also some more of your observations, because even though there's a lot of people that are listening to this call that might not necessarily have flagged that up, a lot of people are experiencing this. So it's important that people all know that this is sort of the process of vision improvement. We don't talk about it too much yet because it could sort of be overwhelming for people if we first introduce to them as eye exercises in that way. But it's certainly a nice way to go about it. Excellent. Well, I'm out of questions here, Richard. Unless you've got
we're out of talking. So let's round it up, I think.
All right. Well, great coaching call this week. The next one is going to be obviously the next third Monday of the month.
I think that's the 21st, but I would have to look at my calendar. I'm pretty sure if today is the 7th, I believe, so the 21st, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the 21st. Okay.
Yep.
Great.
All right.
Well, we look forward to speaking to everyone there. Make sure everybody get your questions coming in, and we look forward to hearing from everybody soon.
All right. Have a good have a couple weeks, and we'll talk to you then.
Okay, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.